time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
I've got a bit of a true confession. In high school, I was not the cool kid. In fact, I would say that I've maintained that my entire life, that I haven't been the cool guy in my entire life. But that was certainly true in high school. Now, you got to remember, I was a magician, right? I mean, you know, when you start looking at the athletes and the popular guys, you know, magician is not real high up on that list. Now, I have to admit, I wasn't a clown, and I apologize if I offend any of the clowns in the audience, and I wasn't a mime. So, you know, I had on the pecking order in the performance, the magic performance world, you know, I at least was a couple of steps up above that. But I was not, in my general high school, a popular guy or a cool guy. Never pretended to be, never thought I was. And so if you're wondering how that plays out, I want to tell you a little bit about what I learned in high school that still carries me today. This is Lee Bockham, and you're with us on the Thriveology Podcast. This is the podcast that teaches you how to thrive in your life, no matter what's going on around you, no matter how things are going, no matter where you've been or where you're trying to get to. This is the podcast about how to thrive better in life. Now, that doesn't always mean that we're here to talk about how to make $1 million or even how to be a high performer, but those are part of it. This is about how to thrive in life. So let's go back to high school. In high school, I took a class in physics. And before I tell you about that physics class, let me tell you about Mr. Zirkle. Now, Mr. Zirkle was the quintessential mad scientist persona. Now, I happen to know that he was faking it, but there are a lot of students who thought he was just the crazy professor. I had him for both chemistry and physics, and he would run mildly around the room with his eyeglasses on and his hair flapping in the breeze as he went wildly around in his lab coat trying to show us experiments. I remember lots of explosions and lots of other things that he tried to let us know how they related to physics and to chemistry. So, now, Mr. Zirkle and I had a bit closer relationship than he did with a lot of other students because he was the advisor of what was my club at the high school. And I hate to admit it, but my club was the Magic Club. I didn't fit anywhere else, and so I created my own club, the Magic Club. And he was our advisor. And so a lot of times he and I were doing some chemistry in the background just to kind of have some fun. And I remember one day he and I were in the lab collecting all kinds of chemicals in order to try out something that I discovered in one of my magic books. And it was going to be flash paper. You know, flash paper is that stuff that goes up in a poof and there's nothing left of it. And so I had gotten what I could, the tissue paper, and he was going to pull out the chemical so we could mix them together. And I remember he was looking at the chemical formula and he was looking at me and he said, you know, I've seen this chemical formula somewhere before. And he went, ah, I remember it. It's the same formula we use for making TNT. And so we decided that probably wasn't the best idea, but we did lots of other things. And so I remember Mr. Zirkle teaching us physics. Now, I've got to also admit, in high school, math was not my strong point. It is still not my strong point. And so while I didn't get all of the math well, I did get the concepts down. And those concepts are concepts that still live with me today. And I wonder how they live with you, because some of those concepts still come up in my life. For instance, when I was a chaplain, I often was faced with the question of why something happened. I remember one night when there had been a car accident, and both of the cars were total, but one of the cars had a fatal injury to the driver. The other car, the driver, who had actually been the one who ran the red light, walked away with a gash in his forehead, and that was it. And I remember going back and forth between the two rooms. And in one room, they were rejoicing that their child had been spared. And in the other room, they were asking why their child had not been spared. And in each room, when they were talking with me, they asked my opinion, and I gave them the same response. My response was physics. Physics is at work here. When those two cars were hurtling at each other through that intersection, there is a law that says that two things cannot be at the same place at the same time. And so when they hit, the two things could not be at the same place at the same time, and that created the collision. From then, there was the idea of momentum, how momentum played into that, and a lot of other physics. And so it didn't take a lot of theological explanation to understand what had happened in that. I relied a lot on that in my chaplain years, of recognizing that there are laws of the world that impact our health greatly. Now, I also have learned that in my own life. You know, I find myself having to follow the law of gravity, for instance, and I find that it's often a reminder of those times when I'm trail running and I hit a rock, and gravity and momentum are going to tell me where I'm going to land and how hard I'm going to land and whether I'm going to hit a tree or not. And when I'm paddling, you know, gravity is going to pull me to the water when I misstep or turn or make some other mistake with a wave. And so I live with those laws, and you live with those laws every single day. And in diving, when I became a dive instructor, I realized that those laws, the gas laws, impacted our lives in great ways, so that in everyday life, we are surrounded by the laws of physics. Some ways they impact us in ways that we don't even think about. So then there's Newton's law. His first law says that an object in motion tends to stay in motion unless it's acted upon by an outside force. He also said an object at rest tends to remain at rest unless it's acted upon by an outside force. Now, that one law tells me so much about personal development and relational development and life development that I wanted to spend a little time talking about that. So you don't have to have had a Mr. Zirkle in high school who was madly running around the classroom to teach lessons. You don't even have to understand a whole lot of the physics to understand that idea, that in order for something to happen, there's a force that has to act upon it. For instance, have you ever pushed a car that was maybe broken down or out of gas? I remember doing it several times where it was like you couldn't even get it going, right? It was you push and you push and you push, and slowly a wheel begins to turn. And you push and you push and push, and slowly it begins to gain a little momentum. And so it goes from that place of rest to suddenly starting to move. And as it begins to move, it's easier and easier to push. It takes less energy to keep it going than to get it going. And so as you're beginning to push it, if you keep on pushing it and there is enough strength behind it, you kind of have to catch up with it, right? It'll almost get in front of you as the momentum catches up, but you have to keep pushing to keep it going. Or how about being on a playground? Remember those merry-go-rounds on the playground that, you know, everybody would get on and one person would kind of hold the handle and run round and around and around trying to get it to speed up. And at first it's really hard to get it going, especially if it's loaded up. And slowly it starts to gain speed and then it begins to turn faster and faster until you know that there's that last chance to jump on before it's just going too fast. And so you jump on and it begins to spin and spin and spin and pull you outward and start tossing people off. And then it begins to slow down because the force acting upon us is no longer applied. It tended to stay in motion until the friction begins to pull it down. So what does that car broken down or that merry-go-round have to do with your life and my life? Well, that same law affects us throughout our life. The law of motion affects us. That first law affects us throughout our life. Let's take a look at a couple of places. For instance, let's look at relationships. You know, sometimes it's really hard to start a relationship. Think about the effort it takes to call somebody up or text them now or find them on an app or somehow relate to them and catch up with them and say, hey, let's go do something. It takes so much energy, so much fear of that. And then you go out and it feels kind of awkward and fearful. But it was good enough that you want to put some more energy into it. And so you follow up. And what you find is as the relationship gains more and more momentum, it takes less and less energy for it to go faster. The problem is the reverse also happens. So in a general trajectory of relationships, sometimes people tend to stop putting that effort in. And the relationship begins to slow down with the inertia and friction of life, and other things get in the way, and our attention gets pulled away, and slowly the relationship begins to slow down until someone finally says, hey, I don't like this. I'm not happy in this. I don't want to keep going this way. And we watch a relationship move to a stop. when all it would have taken was the energy to keep it going? Or how about in your physical life? You know, I've noticed recently, there was a period this summer when I was very active, and I'll tell you, a couple of things derailed me. We had some illness in our family, and my dog died, and so one of the things that was a byproduct of that is I just didn't feel like exercising. Before that, I'd been exercising a lot. I'd been, you know, hitting the paddleboard and running and doing all those physical activities, and for a while, I didn't do as much. Now, it's not that I stopped, but I didn't do as much. Well, guess what happened to my body? Well, this morning when I go downstairs, it's Monday, it's time to start a new week, so I might as well put some energy into that. And so I go down and I realize my push-ups are a little more difficult and my pull-ups are not quite so many, and it takes some extra effort. Now, I know enough to realize that as long as I continue to put forth that effort, it will get easier. But many times in life, we get to that place, whether it's in a relationship or whether it's with our physical life, and we just say, you know what, this is just hard. It shouldn't be this hard. Why should I have to put in the extra effort? Not recognizing that the law of motion has now impacted us. That the slowdown is because we haven't kept the energy into it. We've allowed it to kind of fall away. The same with good habits, right? You set up some great habits in your life about eating and about watching what goes into your body and watching how you kind of take care of your body, what you avoid so you're not at risk. And as long as you keep your eye on that, you know, as long as you kind of spend the energy getting that going, you tend to stay on it. Now, sometimes it's hard to get started. A lot of people find that when they're ready to learn how to eat better, they have to clear out their cupboard. They have to go in and spend the energy to get rid of the things that are going to get in their way. And they have to clear out their refrigerator to make sure there's nothing that will get in their way of eating well. It takes a lot of energy. And then as long as they go to the store and they find the right things and they bring them in, which takes some energy to keep it going, then they have a way of nourishing their body. And it's the same with exercise. It's the same with eating habits. The same with lots of life until we stop putting the energy in. And slowly we find ourselves devolving into a place of less energy. And as it slows down, an object at rest tends to remain at rest until we act upon it and put in more energy. Unfortunately, it often takes enough energy that it frustrates us, and so we give up on that. So what do you do? There are a couple of things that I'm going to recommend you do to honor this law of motion. The first thing with bad habits. Bad habits are about things that we've put into motion, just like good habits. And so we have to give them room to kind of devolve themselves and sometimes to be replaced with good habits. Sometimes the best thing we can do is make sure we take the energy away from the bad habits. Now, if we have a bad habit of eating food that's bad for us, to no longer get that food means that it loses its energy. If we tend to find ourselves smoking or using other substances, to not have that around keeps us from adding energy into that. So sometimes bad habits is a matter of letting inertia take care of it, just staying away from it so that inertia takes care of it. But the more important thing is what we do with it around good habits. The first thing I would recommend is you take a good habit you want to start and break it down into smaller parts. So if you want to begin training for a marathon, that takes a lot of energy and momentum down the way, but you can start with deciding to take a run walk in the neighborhood. That's a beginning step. You remember, the marathon is a huge amount of momentum flowing, and it's hard to get started unless you break it down into the smaller pieces. Or let's say you want to work on a relationship that's struggling. You can either be caught up in the fact that the relationship is struggling, or you can say, what are the steps where I can change the momentum and begin to move the momentum in a direction that's helpful for me? What are the steps of that? And you begin to break it down. How can I begin to connect with my spouse? How can I begin to show my spouse love in ways that they want to be loved? And you break it down into the smaller pieces, because the smaller pieces start the momentum. It's kind of like, you know, beginning to push against that car. You start with a big shove, but you're really grinding down to that beginning point. So when you've broken it down into smaller steps, it's easier to get started because you don't have to master the whole piece. You only have to start with a small piece. It only takes one piece of the puzzle to begin the process. you choose one piece of the breakdown in order to get started. So that's the next piece, is to only choose one to start the momentum. And then create accountability. The nice way of doing that is to say to a friend, hey, let's agree that we're going to work on this area of life. Let's agree that we're going to exercise together. So that person meets you at the gym or meets you for a run or a walk or somehow begins that process of accountability. Or you might say, hey, you know what? I'm working on my relationship. Would you just check in with me tomorrow and ask me if I sent that nice text or if I brought home those flowers or if I, you know, was extra nice about cleaning the kitchen or finding some other thing to do to show that love. And so you create accountability with somebody who's going to say, why didn't you do that? A lot of times, all we need is somebody to answer to, some way of knowing that we're going to have to be accountable for what's going on in our life. That accountability can be just enough to get the momentum going. Remember, right now, we're trying to just get something new started, and momentum is always moving against us. So when something's at rest, we simply find a way of beginning to edge it forward, beginning to move it forward. And part of that is having that plan in place in a way that makes it simple. You know, to step back and say, what am I wanting to do, and what is the most direct way to get there? You know, when I remember those cars that were broken down, one of the things that we first decided when we were going to push that car was which way was downhill. You know, if we could get away with pushing it downhill, we would be much better off than if we had to push it uphill, because momentum still would work in our favor if we chose the easier route. So you find the easier, most effective route. Now, the easier route doesn't mean it's the cop-out route. You know, it's not the way that you avoid doing what needs to be done, as much as you make sure that you're being as effective as you can be in the process. So if you're working on getting in shape, to actually do some research and see what is the best way of doing that. For example, I always recommend that if somebody's at the beginning of working on getting back into shape, that they check out the 7-minute workout. The 7-minute workout is 7 minutes out of the day. It's not deciding you're going to go to the gym and push weights for 2 hours. It's not deciding that you're going to go and run 10 miles in your neighborhood. It's about taking 7 minutes to begin the process of getting your body going. And so a lot of times we want to find that we're taking the smartest way to get somewhere. We can take those shortcuts. You know, when people come to me and say, hey, I want to work on saving my relationship, and they go into these long details about how they do it, my recommendation is that they, for instance, grab my Save the Marriage material, SaveTheMarriage.com, because it creates a plan for how they can work through it instead of having to kind of reinvent it or rediscover or master everything about marriage. They can create the plan from that material. So what that means is at the outset, we begin the process by planning our momentum, planning our attack of this process. And then we break it down into smaller parts so then we can choose one piece to get started. And then we create accountability so that somebody is making sure that that we're doing what we're saying we're going to do. And then we create that plan and put it on our calendar, right? To have it in a place that we're going to see it every day and review it every day gives us a way of maintaining that momentum that we're building and then adding on to it. The other thing is that we create a space around that where we're going to create a vacuum that's going to be pulling us forward. For instance, let's say that you decide that you want to have a new habit of getting into shape and you haven't done that before. So you're going to put your workout shoes and your workout clothes right beside the bed. So when you get up in the morning, the space is there. It's easy to do. Or you clear a space in the basement where you can work out a little bit. The space is there. Or you discover that you need to add something into your relationship to work on the relationship. And so you find some room. You say, you know what, I'm not going to play those video games, or I'm not going to go to as many movies, or I'm not going to go out with my friends as much. So the space is there to add it back into the relationship. And as you do that, you find that the momentum begins to grow. And I will warn you, the momentum is always, according to the law of physics, the hardest at the beginning. And that's when you have to commit to the process of moving it forward. An object at rest will remain at rest until acted upon by you, the outside force. This is Lee Balcom wishing you a thriving life.
You've been been listening to the Thriveology Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at Thriveology.com or at ThriveologyMagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled Thriveology. It's your life. Time to live it.